wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. We're about a half hour away from the film show featuring news and interviews about the independent film scene here in Portland. But up next, it's Between the Covers. Today, host Lisa Loving speaks with Cole Cohen about her new book, and that's next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a film screening of COINTELPRO 101 Monday, June 1st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. COINTELPRO 101 is a one-hour documentary produced by the Freedom Archives explaining an illegal FBI program coined as the Counterintelligence Program, spearheaded by J. Edgar Hoover, that targeted revolutionaries of the 60s and 70s. There will also be a presentation of ongoing local work and Q&A session after the film. Again, that's COINTELPRO 101 Monday, June 1st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Five Centers for the Arts, presenting The Bicycle Men, a bawdy musical comedy featuring Second City alumni. The Bicycle Men tells the story of Steve, a hapless American cyclist whose bike breaks down in a small French village. The Bicycle Men, on stage June 5th through June 7th at the Winningstad Theater. Tickets and information at portland5.com. Also, Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
All right. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisa Loving, and it's our privilege this morning to spend time with the most incredible author ever, Cole Cohen. I'm not making that up. You are incredible.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
Her book is Headcase, My Brain and Other Wonders. She's reading tonight at 7 p.m. at Powell's on Burnside, and I'm going to read from the book jacket because you're basically not going to believe it. Okay, I'm saying this. For as long as she can remember, Cole Cohen has struggled with a series of learning disabilities that make it nearly impossible to judge time and space. Standing at a crosswalk, she couldn't tell you if an oncoming car would arrive in 10 seconds or 30. If you asked her to let you know when 10 minutes had passed, she might notify you in a minute or an hour. When, the summer before she heads to an out-of-state MFA program, 26-year-old Cohen submits herself to a battery of tests in an attempt to finally get to the bottom of her struggles, doctors find a hole in her brain that they cannot explain. Without established tools to rely on in the wake of this utterly unique diagnosis, Cohen and her doctors create them. I'm not sure where to start. Your writing is so funny, but it also makes me want to cry a little bit, okay? Your wordplay, your observations, the way you sketch out visual cues, make this a very hard book to put down, okay? So I just want to start out, how many developmental tests did you go through as a child, and how did that impact your family?
Sure. I went through countless tests. I was tested for dyslexia. I was tested for ADD. There's probably several I don't remember. Originally, when I applied for colleges, I was using the term motor. Well, let's see if I can even do this. Neuromotor, just a vague neuromotor learning disorder. And then it wasn't until 3 years after college that I had my MRI. So lots of tests and lots of confusion, and my parents were really supportive. And the reason I had all the tests was you know, because they were well-intended and they were trying to help me get through school. But it was very confusing.
What is an MRI?
An MRI is, you've probably seen them on you've probably seen them on shows like Grey's Anatomy or other like medical soap operas. It's when they take a scan of your brain. They don't tell you, though, that it's really actually really loud. They don't show that on the TV shows because they wouldn't be able to. But they put you inside this tube, and you have to lie down very still, and they take a photo of your brain.
Now, how big is the hole? I feel so uncomfortable asking this. It's like,
it's okay.
You look like my sister. We could be related. I'm like, I know that you have a disability. We talked about this a few minutes ago,
sure.
But you don't seem disabled at all. You seem like a beautiful young woman. How big is the hole in your brain?
It's about the size of a lemon, or the fist of a 10-year-old was another one that my neurologist used. It's pretty big, but it affects one specific part of the brain. So there's plenty of other parts of my brain that aren't as affected. And yet, you know, it doesn't talk very well to the other side of the brain. The side where there's the atrophy has made it difficult to talk to the side where there isn't an atrophy. So, you know, the brain is really a holistic organ. So it's kind of all over the place and nowhere at the same time.
This, to me, I feel like I've read before that the brain is the last great uncharted wilderness. It's like inner space, basically. That fascinates me. And you know, at the beginning of your story, you talk about how frustrated you were as a youth, and you acted out, and as a result the medical establishment basically drugged you up because they didn't know what was going on, in a sense, because no one knew anything else to do. Why do you think that happened, and what was it like for you when the doctors took you off all the psych drugs?
Sure. Well, I think that happened in part because we went to a lot of learning specialists in public schools. And I think that when you're a learning specialist, when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And I think that's part of why I was diagnosed with so many different learning disabilities, because that's the language that they spoke, was learning disability. Nobody thought about neurology or MRIs. And MRIs were also, you know, this was pretty early in even the construction of MRIs. It wasn't fun, and getting off of them was a slow process of tapering off, and I had some neurofeedback, which helped me to taper off of the drugs. But yeah, you know, at the time, I thought that I needed them. Hmm. Who knew?
Because, in other words, it's like a software versus a hardware problem. I'm
exactly.
And right at the start of the book, we're talking about Headcase, My Brain, and Other Wonders. You become a research subject, like a medical mystery. And I'm fascinated by your doctor, Dr. Volt, who was like a detective who figured out what was wrong. How scary was that process? Or was it scary for you? Was it exciting because it was a solution? Was it bad or good?
It was a complete shock. And it was both terrifying and a huge relief, because I knew now what my story was. And the funny thing is that immediately it made complete sense. And it's very odd to say that, like, having a giant hole in my brain made total sense. I was like, yep, that sounds about right. And it totally, in a lot of ways, validated my experience in the world in a way that I hadn't been able to have that validation before, because I had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm. You were going to read a little bit from the book. Now's a good time. Can you read that section?
Sure, that would be great. I'm actually going to read from a Portland section.
You've lived here before.
Yes.
You were saying that you moved here when your parents moved here when you were in college, and that's why you spent some time in Portland.
Right. My family moved here when I was in college, and I've lived here on and off for many years. And right now I live in Santa Barbara, but I'm always thinking about moving back. So this is 2004 Portland, Oregon, the first time I moved here right out of college. In 2004, after living with my parents for a year, they moved to Portland when my father started teaching philosophy again while I was in college. I have saved enough money to move out on my own. The city of Portland is laid out in a grid. The streets are in alphabetical order, or they are numbered. Neighborhoods are divided neatly into quadrants: southeast, northeast, southwest, downtown, and northwest. I start my tic-tac-toe game of moving from neighborhood to neighborhood in a rundown house in southeast Portland. Last year, the inventor of the MRI won a Nobel Prize. It will be 3 years still until I lie down inside of one. Out of college for a year and a half, after 4 years of believing that we are each special enough to merit degrees as individual as snowflakes from the Johnston Center, that's my college, my college friends and I are all working retail. I work as a barista in the cafe section of a Borders Books and Music store in the suburbs, where I meet a bookseller who lives with several roommates in a house on Southeast Belmont Street, close to the Fred Meyer supermarket on Hawthorne. The house next to hers is empty. She writes her landlord's phone number on a cafe napkin for me. My former college roommate, Miranda, drives up from her parents' place in Southern Oregon to take a look at the house with me. The beige paint is peeling, and the carpeted floor looks like the matted fur of a rabid animal in its final, mouth-foaming death throes. But we decide to take it because it's in walking distance of a grocery store and a coffee shop, and it's dirt cheap. On moving day, Miranda and I sit down together on the crooked front steps. "I can't live here," she says. "This place is falling apart." She agrees to stick it out for the first month until I can find someone to replace her. We furnish the house with cast-off items from my parents' garage and thrift store finds. A month later, when Miranda moves in with her boyfriend into an apartment in Northeast, we manage to replace her with another Johnston alum, known to most as Jolly Clown Boy. Jolly sleeps in the living room, since we ceded the upstairs to two nattily dressed male members of our next-door neighbor's church youth group. We're not really sure how they got here. The house is becoming its own organic being, taking hostages. The house wants what the house wants. It gets bigger and bigger, collecting more people and incorporating them into itself, like a snowball gathering weight and speed just before an avalanche. Months go by in strings of days turned weeks, and none of us outwardly notice the rate at which our descent from peak to valley is accelerating.
I think I know Jolly Clownboy. I'm just We are live in the studios with author Cole Cohen. Her memoir is Headcase, My Brain and Other Wonders. She's going to be speaking and reading from this book tonight at Powell's at 7 p.m., Powell's on Burnside. Cole, I love your family and friends like Miranda, who comes back again, and
right.
She helps you. She helps you move into graduate school and settle. And as a reader, I feel how hard you watch your friends as if to interpret their lives, right? And how your life maybe is compared to them. And like Minerva and Charlie, you do the same thing. And I wanted to ask, how important has it been for you to find supportive community among your peers, right? And how easy was that?
Oh, that's huge for me. You know, especially as someone who needs some extra help with things that people take for granted. And I don't present as somebody who needs that extra help. So it's especially important for me to have people around me who understand my story and who know that it's going to take me a little bit longer to, you know, do something like cross the street because I take extra time because it's hard for me to tell how far and fast the cars are going. I have a friend who helps me sometimes with grocery shopping because it just takes me longer to find things and to, rides. Love friends giving me rides because I don't drive because of this. So it's been great.
Can you describe what part of your brain is affected? Because I didn't ask you that before. Just
sure.
A little bit more of the specifics of the diagnosis.
Sure. It's the right parietal lobe, which is responsible for judging time and speed and math. I use a tip calculator for calculating tips on bills. It's responsible for holding a map in your brain. So I don't really hold a map in my brain. I get lost constantly. But, you know, it's not the end of the world. Eventually, I find my way. But everything just takes me a lot longer.
And you cope with balloons and phones. And I love it. I just love this book. Cole, a recurring theme in the book is Alice in Wonderland. Why?
Oh.
Alice in Wonderland.
Sure. It was a very surreal experience finding out that I had this hole in my brain. And I thought of Alice in Wonderland because it was just sort of a classic down the rabbit hole feeling that I had where everything just felt turned upside down. So it seemed like the perfect sort of keystone text to use to help structure the book.
Mm-hmm. Another thing. We were talking a little earlier about Mad Max, right?
Yes.
You know, before we start the show. In this book, Mad Max strikes me as, it's like a, it's kind of a mythological thing, although to be honest with you, after watching that movie, I get more of a sense that that could really be our real future without Mel Gibson, right? But it's also sort of a, there's sort of super sheroes in this movie. And what's another thing that you constantly have is this theme of invisibility, of being invisible throughout this book, Headcase. But the funny thing is, invisibility is considered by many people to be a superpower, okay? Is there, in fact, I believe that you dedicate the book to all people who have ever felt invisible. Is there like a secret community of invisible people, or how did you come to feel invisible? And is that good, or is it bad, or can it be both?
It can be both. The first thing that I thought about was shame. I felt a lot of shame not knowing what was going on with me and having a hard time doing things that came very easily to other people. I would flip numbers and phone numbers. I would have a hard time with making change. And so a lot of my emotional reactions before I knew what this was were, you know, invisible reactions. I felt like I had to hide. I felt like I had to keep under wraps something I didn't even understand myself. And then when I got the MRI, again, it's invisible. It's something that you can't see. It's something that I could have lived my whole life not knowing. It's something that I will my whole life be responsible for explaining, which I think in some ways is a privilege. I can also completely hide it away, and that's not the choice that I made. I don't know if there's a community of invisible people, maybe because they're invisible, and hopefully, you know, this will help them maybe come to light a bit more. But my next book is actually about alter egos. So I have been thinking a lot about superheroes and superpowers and invisible strengths.
Is it a nonfiction book or a novel?
It is. It's a nonfiction book.
Have you ever read that book called Soon I Will Become Invincible, which is a novel? I have to look that up for you later.
That'd be great.
I love that book. It's a novel that a man who, a Berkeley graduate student wrote this novel about the bad guy, you know? It's mm-hmm. a total investigation of good versus bad and the good and bad in everyone. But anyway, listeners, we are live in the studio with Cole Cohen. We're talking about her book, Headcase, My Brain and Other Wonders. And this is just, to me, this is kind of a tough interview because there's so much going on here, and I want to ask you questions that seem rude, and I don't want to be rude, and yet your journey is amazing. It's fascinating, and again, this book is hard to put down. I want to ask about your sweetheart and finding a sweetheart. What was that like, and what were the biggest obstacles, and are you dating now?
I am on and off. Not seeing anybody seriously right now. I think the relationship that I talk about in the book wasn't all that different from other people's relationships. I think that we had a lot of the same problems that, you know, even if I didn't have a hole in my brain the size of a lemon, we probably wouldn't have been a great match just because of the people we are. But also, yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different to date somebody who has a little bit of a hard time finding their way around the grocery store, or who doesn't drive and who needs a little bit of extra help. And that's always going to be who I am, for better or for worse.
All right. Again, we're speaking with Cole Cohen. She's going to be at Powell's on Burnside tonight at 7 p.m. reading from this book, Headcase, and you can get copies of it, I'm sure, there as well. The story of finding out when you're 26 years old that you have a hole in your brain the size of a lemon, that boggles my mind, because I'm fascinated by the brain and I'm just a dilettante, you know. I don't know anything about brain chemistry or anything like that, but I was already saying, you know, this is inner space. We're always looking at what parts of our brain make us who we are. And as we see people who have come home from the Iraq wars, the wars that we've had, there have been a lot of people with traumatic brain injuries, and what those have done to people. What about the brain have you learned that the rest of us should know? You're surely one of the most fascinating brain experts on earth right now.
Well, I'm also a dilettante. You know, I'm definitely not a neurologist, but I have learned a ton about the brain. I think, to me, and I know this is something that's not super new, but I'm still really knocked out by the brain's plasticity. I'm really excited and optimistic about how much there is to learn about the brain. It's sort of overwhelming how much we don't know, and I think in a way that's a good thing, because it's sort of exciting.
It is a mystery.
Yes, definitely.
But just to be clear, though, you have certain deficits in your coping abilities. I guess I'll say it like that. But there are certain things that you've been able to do, like through different sorts of, is physical therapy the right word? You can use different parts of your brain, like you said, the plasticity part.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little? How has your brain changed since you had this diagnosis and you've been able to try to work around it or figure out what's going on?
I actually see a neurological chiropractor in Portland, Oregon. Dr. Glenn Zielinski has been a great help. And that's sort of part of why I'm excited, because I work with him and I see that there are changes that can happen. I also do exercises on my own. I've also done some neurofeedback here in Portland that I think has helped. And it's always a total mystery, like we were saying, but I do have like exercises on my computer that I do, that I follow a little dot.
That's what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, like, sure.
What are the, because I see that as physical therapy.
You know, and that's funny, because the first thing I thought was, oh, there must be something I can do akin to physical therapy. And within the traditional medical community, there really isn't. There isn't something that they gave me to do, or there isn't a pill and they didn't say, you know, go home and do this. So I sort of found my own ways. And one of the things that I do is at work in Santa Barbara, I have the exercises on my computer and I'll do them when I'm feeling tired. And I have at my laptop at home, it's just like following a little bouncing ball with my eyes. And it helps to energize and strengthen parts of my brain.
It's amazing. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Cole Cohen. Her new book is Headcase, My Brain and Other Wonders. Were you born with the hole in the hole in your brain? I mean, where did it come from? Is there any, you don't really know.
Right. I don't really know. There's no real way to know. I was actually born with umbilical cord wrapped around my neck, so that might have done it. But to be honest, it could have been a totally different thing. Really don't know.
But to be crystal clear, as far as we know, has no one else has been diagnosed with the same situation. Is that correct?
Well, it's sort of like stroke damage. So in that, like, you can have an accident, you can have a traumatic injury, and every brain injury is going to be a little bit different. So there are people with similar atrophies or acquired brain injuries. And again, because I don't really know the source of my condition, it's hard for me to say exactly how rare it is, but it seems pretty rare.
Okay. I said this already. This book makes me question some of the terms we use in our society, like disabled, you know? You're disabled, but I feel like you're more talented in some ways than most other people I've ever met are. How did you find yourself? How did you figure out who you are in this whole process? Were there specific things you did around understanding your own identity? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think so, yeah. For myself, I made the choice to use the word disability. And I don't think that's a choice for everyone. I decided that because this is something that you can't see, I needed a really assertive word. I needed a word that was a difficult word, and a word that was a little bit forceful, because I have a lot of assumptions placed on me that aren't true. Assumptions that I'm totally and completely like everyone else. So even though that's a word that I think is fraught in a lot of ways, for me, I actually find it helpful because I need, all I have is language, because this book is about something that you can't see. And that's part of why I wrote the book, was so that I could describe and kind of, you know, witness what my world is like. So I was really, I mean, for me, it's a tool to use the word disabled, but for other people I know, it's also a hindrance, and it can be both, definitely.
I want to now. I just have to ask you questions about what you're working on now.
Sure.
So you got a master's of fine arts.
Yes.
And you live in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
And tell me more about your job there. Are you you're an academic?
No.
Okay. Tell me more about your job.
Sure. I am a program coordinator. I work in events at the Humanities Center. So I help to run a lecture series, a series of academic talks, which is interesting because it's a lot of scheduling. It's a lot of going backwards and forwards in time. So I have to double and triple check. I actually make a calendar, which is like, who thought that was a good idea to let me make a calendar for work? But, you know, I've been there 4 years, so far so good. But I do, you know, I do a lot of extra checking on my work. And we have guests, and so every week I'm in a lecture, and I run the reception afterwards and ask questions, and it's a really fun job.
Who's the coolest person you've met? Lecture series are fun.
Yeah.
Who's the coolest person?
Oh, man. No, I'm totally
Kissinger.
Blanking out.
Have you met Kissinger?
I haven't met Kissinger.
Okay.
I meet a lot of academics. We have a theme every year, and this year the theme is the Anthropocene. So I've been meeting a lot of really cool people who are working on environmental issues. And next year, actually, the theme is the brain. So I'm excited to see who's going to come talk with us.
That's amazing. One of my favorite parts of the book was when you're sort of describing like how you get through the grocery store now.
Yes.
And I feel like there's a part about having a balloon on your wrist. And what are the tools that you use most to cope? I mean, how do you use your smartphone? What are the tools, the physical tools that help
sure.
you the most?
So balloon on my wrist was actually a metaphor. Like, I'm tying time to my wrist like a balloon when I use my digital watch. Digital watch is a big physical tool in my world. It's how I'm wearing one right now.
I'm looking at her watch.
Voila! It's how I make sure I get out the door in time for work every morning. I'm constantly checking time. Smartphone, what's great about the smartphone for me is not so much the maps, because I can't really translate them to where I am, but to be able to text somebody or call somebody and say, hey, I'm standing here and I am not moving from this spot. Can you please come get me? if, you know, like, say I'm in like a, I don't know, like a Target or like those big box stores, I can just sort of wander the aisles forever, and then someone will text me and say, hey, where'd you go, Cole? So that's really helpful for me.
Wow. And the truth is, you're not alone in that one thing.
I would think.
It might not be exactly the same for everyone, but I can't even go to Costco anymore because it's, anyway, the evolution of stores that are as big as, you know, caverns. So we're running out of show. I just have one last question.
You sure.
know, for parents of kids that, the kid has an issue, but the parents can't figure it out. For families with kids with an issue that they can't figure out, for kids with an issue, what's the most important advice you can give to us and our families trying to figure out what's going on around us?
Wow. That's a huge question. I think perseverance is important. I also think one of the things that I'd like to pass on, and it's really difficult, is that with a child, it's really easy for the child to hear, oh, there's something wrong with me. And I think doing your best to keep it positive is really helpful. And to just sort of think of it as an adventure and a curiosity while you're learning your way.
All right. I just feel really privileged to be here.
Oh, thanks. So do I.
Thanks, Cole. So we've been speaking with Cole Cohen. Her book is Headcase: My Brain and Other Wonders. She's reading tonight at Powell's on Burnside at 7 p.m. I think your dad's going to be there.
My whole family's going to be there.
Woohoot! thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
And stay tuned.
Hello, KBOO members. You are invited to attend KBOO's Mission and Vision Retreat on May the 30th from noon to 4 p.m. This retreat is an opportunity for members to support the development of a mission and vision statement for KBOO and to share your valuable knowledge about your community radio station. If you would like to attend the retreat on May the 30th, get in touch with Monica Beamer and RSVP by sending her an email at monica@kboo.org or calling 503-231-8032, extension 201. More details about the agenda for the retreat will be sent to you when you RSVP. We hope to see you on May the 30th, and thank you for being an active member of KBOO.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizzas, salads, and wraps, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland. 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Hello, and welcome to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and I'll be joined in just a few minutes by my co-host, Jen Chavez. Jen will be talking this morning with Ariella Migdal of the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU's Film Equality Campaign is currently investigating gender discrimination in film and TV hiring practices. They're asserting that Hollywood doesn't get a free pass to violate civil rights laws. And I'll be joined by artists Craig Winslow and Michael Ackerman. And next week, Craig and Mike are setting out on a road trip from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon. And wherever they stop for the night, they'll be setting up projection